Speak on it. Shot my friend down, down, down.
Oh, ooh, ooh, ooh. Officer with the Waterloo Regional Police. Known Eddie my entire life, so he asked me to join in the conversation today and share my perspective. And yeah, welcome. I'm feeling very welcome to be here and looking forward to talking with all of you guys. I have no problem calling out bad cops. I have no problem saying that what those officers did in Minneapolis, what's happened, like anything where there's injustice, if I truly believe in my heart of hearts that something wrong, I have no problem speaking on it. I know that since becoming a cop, I've had to look back at other cases of the past and think, okay, like, how did they get to the point where they got their firearm out and discharged it? And I know that ones where I've been super outraged in the moment, now having this knowledge on the use of force model and how things can escalate, I can kind of almost understand a very, very small minority of them. I can't even think specifically of which ones I'm talking about or else I would tell you, but I know that I had to go back and think like, okay, I can understand how this ended up being how it did. But for the most part, a bad cop's a bad cop's a bad cop. And we all have eyes, we all have ears, and we all have hearts. And we can see that what a lot of people, well, a lot of these instances are just not right. Just not right. And I think that it's important for them to see someone like me call it out, because that is someone that looks like me. That could be me. If I lived 500 kilometers south, who knows? The friends that I have in the States, am I worried about them? For sure. The friends I have here, am I worried about them? One of my best friends, I always joke with him, like, you know, you should become a cop. He has no desire to become a cop. Even though he sees me in it, he knows that I'm a cop. He supports me in doing it, but as an organization, he doesn't support police for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I get that. I can understand people's outrage. Mm-hmm. I can understand people's fear. And all I can do is talk to people, have these conversations with people, and show them, you know, I go into situations smiling if the situation dictates that. I don't want people to have their guard up. I want people to see me and the fear go from here to here, then let's have a conversation, let's figure it out. I'll go my separate way, you go your separate way. So,
yeah.
All
right. I wanted to say, to give Liz the opportunity, and then I had a follow-up question afterwards. But Liz, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for being here, Jeremy. I had a question. So I work for an organization that does victim services and child welfare services. And one of the people that sits on our board is also a police officer.
Yep.
But the thing is, like Ian was saying, I think the whole system of policing is being called into question, right? And yep. We're also questioning, we have a lot of our board meeting at the like Peel Region Police Office. And now we're questioning, hey, should we even have our board meetings there? Should we be questioning the president of our board, who's a police officer, on his politics on Black Lives Matter movements and things like that, right? So, and even going off of Monty's point, like, where do we find the balance? And I think this is for everyone as well. Where do we find the balance between creating safe spaces for people of color who have had really negative, crappy experiences with police officers, and allowing police officers that grace perhaps to come into those spaces and change people's minds? Because right now it doesn't seem like there is some sort of middle ground.
I think that it just has to take a number of different interactions with police. I know that I have friends that hate police. That hate police. And I use that word hate. Hate police. But knowing that I am in that role instantly, and this is from them, that their perspective on police changed because they see me in that role. And then with further conversations with me, with other cops, I think that people's guard can start to come down, people can start to trust police. And maybe not as a whole institution, but maybe that officer, maybe that next officer that shows up to the call with them, then maybe that first officer is not there, but that second officer you met is the next person you deal with, and you're okay with that. And then your guard starts to come down. I think that it's not going to be a one fell swoop of change. I don't think it's possible. I think that people have feelings, rightfully so, and people have their guard up on police. I wasn't always the biggest fan of police, I'll say that. Before this role, before... before being in this role, I had my own, and I still have my own opinions on police, and but I know that if I could be hired to do this job, then there's probably other people that are like me, and that conversations that these need to constantly be had so people can feel better about interacting with police and dealing with police. Because I do think as a whole, people are going to leave an interaction with police. They might be upset. Nobody likes being talked to by police. Like, even if it's something like dumb, people don't like to be talked to by police. They think they're being questioned when it's simply us trying to look for information. And like I said, they might think that that was some sort of mistreatment, because why are you asking me about this robbery that happened here or break-in? And it's like, I just want to know if you saw anything. And it's just like, I've had situations where it's like, I don't know why this person's so hostile with me. But after that, I'm talking to them and I kind of-
You really not know?
I kind of let them know
why people aren't why people are hostile towards the police.
No. I'm talking about in a situation just like that. I'm being very
right. Okay. Yeah.
There's a neighborhood break and enter, and I'm knocking on doors, and or people are walking around the street, and the first person I see, I ask them. Sometimes they get hostile, and it's just like all I'm trying to do is figure. This person got the house broken into. I want to figure out who the person that did it was. And
but it's obviously that's completely understandable, but I feel the reason people are hostile towards the police is because the police are, for the most part, hostile towards people.
And I don't agree with that. Like I said, most people don't like being talked to by police. And people,
why is that? Why do you think that is?
Because people don't like police. People don't respect.
Why do you think that is?
Because of this, because we. Systemically, people don't like police. Police have oppressed people. Police,
right?
But
quick comment.
Yeah.
Me personally, okay.
Yep.
I have always, in my interactions with police at Tim Hortons, at anywhere, they've always been courteous. They've always been nice. It's always been, "Hey, ma'am." I'm like, "Hey, officer. How's your day?" Right. It's always been like that. However,
yeah.
I think, and if a cop was like, "Hey, there was a break-in entering," I'm the first person to be like, "Yeah, I saw their license plate." I'm the first person, right?
Not related.
However, when I see statistics, because I'm a researcher, when I see statistics where, you know, like there's so many things that go wrong with interactions with Black people and police officers, and so many things that go right when it's white people and police officers, like one on one isn't adding up to two. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you.
Do you think the police can do anything different as a sort of, you know, as a organization?
Hire more Black people.
Hire more Black people. I think that's really, really great.
Hire more Black people. That's a start. I'm the only visible dark-skinned Black person in North Division. I'm the only one. And that's just the fact of it. I don't have anyone that I'm sharing this outrage with. Yeah, people are upset about what's happening in the States, but people, it's just, right now, this is super trendy. Black Lives Matter, Blackout Tuesday, this is super trendy. And I've been so frustrated because I know that in a week, in 2 weeks, in 3 weeks, you go on people's Instagram pages, you're not gonna see that black square.
Right.
It's gone. It's super trendy. I'm an ally, I'm a support, and they're gonna share a million stories and then right. Go about it. It's super trendy, but it's like, how are we gonna make change together?
So you feel as a black officer, you bring certain perspectives to 100%. The force that weren't there.
Dealing with those racialized communities, we have a community, and I think everyone can think of a community in your city where it's just like a bunch of Africans, a bunch of Middle Eastern people all living in close proximity with each other, and that's usually a ghetto type neighborhood, right? It's low income housing. That's usually where it is. And I know that I've had situations where I've seen firsthand where my coach, he looks at me and just like, I haven't had a conversation with that person like you just had. Mm. It's just this seeing me de-escalate situations.
Right.
And I've seen it. I've seen it happen. And I'm so happy that can happen, where they are willing to have more of a conversation and be more open and willing to even just talk to us and be cooperative, and not necessarily be cooperative, but even just talk to us sometimes. It's nice that they will bring themselves down, and not only will they be fine with me, they'll start to be fine with the people that right. I'm with.
Do you feel, sorry for monopolizing, Chief Sanders is the chief of police in Toronto. I think Toronto has a huge problem with racial profiling. He's a black chief of police. Is it enough to hire black police, or is there something else that needs to happen?
I think it's a very good start. I think it's a very good start, especially if you're with a lot of black people. Those interactions are going to change. I'm not going to think that this black person is scary because they are 6'1", have braids, and they smell like they just smoke weed. Like, I'm not going to put all these things together and have my guard up just because of a perceived image of what a criminal may look like, or a bad person, or whatever negative thought of this person you might have. I think that going into those situations, I'm just going to be like, this is just another dude that is doing X, Y, and Z, where I have had interactions. I hang out with friends that look just like that profile, right? Where they don't. They might have one, two black friend, family member, right? They might have that, but they don't know what it's like living it. They don't know what it's like having relationships with those sort of people. They can just say, yeah, you know what? I have a black friend. I talk to black people, but it's like, no, like there's more to it. And I think that the more black people you have, not just black people, but brown people, Middle Eastern people, Asian people, racialized people, I think diversity is incredibly important because that will in itself de-escalate situations.
Lady M, I think you wanted to chime in.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to chime in on this, inclusive practices and integration. First of all, we have to address that it is the history of policing is entrenched in white supremacy. We have to look at that. We have to acknowledge that. And I'm sorry, but I don't believe that any type of hiring is going to change that. It has to be a complete reform of the system. Mm-hmm. That's
okay. But
let me just add why I'm saying this. We just saw on social media all kinds of companies, Wendy's and Harvey's and McDonald's, all of a sudden are showing solidarity, right? Mm-hmm. When they don't have any, they rarely have any management who is a person of color, or if they do, they're not paid well. You understand what I mean? Their senior board does not have any representation of people of color, but all of a sudden you care about Black Lives Matter? Really? So my question now is it possible that they hire people of color as a way of deflecting the fact that this is a white supremacist issue? And to make it to essentially have token brown people to show inclusivity.
Affirmative action. Okay,
so, like I said, I'm only black.
Affirmative action.
I'm only black officer that I work with. If you are talking about instant change where you have black people at the top, and they were to fire the chief, deputy chief, everybody above me, and then suddenly I'm the next one up and I'm chief, that's not a good idea. Nobody should give me that much authority right now. I think it's important to hire people, train them, give them all the opportunities so eventually they can get to that point. And whether it's knowing that we have no Black people higher up, we need to lift this person up faster, put them on an accelerator to get to one of these positions. I think that's important. But I don't think that doing a full clean sweep of everybody at the top is what the important change is going to be. And that's just because people need to be taught and trained, just like in any other.
Absolutely. So you're telling me there are no sergeants of color, no captains of color that can't be promoted to that level?
I'm not saying that whatsoever.
In my opinion, Sanders is the chief of police in Toronto, the biggest metropolitan in Canada. Yes. And a lot of people have some criticisms of the job he's been doing.
Okay, but you're going to have criticisms of every single chief that's in that role. Find me a chief where you don't have criticisms of. People are going to have those criticisms. People are human. They're doing a job. And although people are going to have their opinions, especially if someone in that sort of position, as someone that is a Black chief of police, they want to see a overwhelming sweep of change. The same thing that they felt with Obama when he ran for 2 terms. They want to see, like, you know, we finally got it. He's finally in. It's our time now. And people are very critical of what
Obama didn't do much for Black lives.
Obama did nothing.
Right.
So it begs the question, does hiring of Black police force, I mean, I can see how it can help certain situations.
It's not instantaneous. I'm sorry to cut you off, Ian. It's not.
No, please.
There needs to be a wide sweeping number of racialized people being hired. I got hired with 9 other white people, right? Like,
why is that?
Well,
numbers. Now,
a lot of Black people don't want to apply to be police officers too. That's another thing. I tell all of my friends, yo, apply. I tell everybody, I kid you not, I want to see my friends get hired. I think that if I can do this job, any of you people on the screen could do this job. And I wholeheartedly mean that. Now, it's just a matter of motivation and drive if you wanted to proceed it. But I tell all Black people, young kids that I'm seeing in the community, in uniform and out of uniform, think about becoming a police officer. It's how you're going to make change. People don't think this change is going to happen. But eventually, when we're looking at 50-50 Black and white or racialized and white, our voices are going to be heard. My voice, I'm a new constable. I don't have a huge footprint, but all I can do is when I'm interacting with people higher up than me, show them that I'm willing, I'm tolerant, I'm all these things where I can try to make a difference. That's all I can do. Mm-hmm. But if there's more of us, if there's more Black people, more representation, eventually we're gonna start moving up the ranks at equal rates as other people. But there's just way less. There's way less of us. That's just
okay.
Way less.
And I'm so sorry to steal your spot there, Eddie, because I know you had something. But explain to me then, how do you get into police work and get to a point where you can basically be complicit? Because people will say, oh, they're a good cop, because no, they're not doing the harm, but they're turning away. They're turning a blind eye to it. So that person who's turning a blind eye to it is just as guilty. So my question is, how can that even be explained? If you have a duty to serve and protect, how do you get to a point where you can turn a blind eye? How is that justifiable?
I know if I saw something wrong, I would handle it appropriately. If I saw somebody doing something that I didn't agree with, that wasn't lawful, that wasn't executing what we should be doing as police officers, I would stand up and I would say something. Have I been in that situation? No. So all I can say is that I believe that I would do something, but I can't speak on other people. You're asking me to speak on other people stepping into to do things and being, because I can't speak on that. People are all individuals. If we're driving the police car and I'm with my partner tells me, oh, you're good to turn right, and I decide to turn right and I smoke a car, I'm the one that's in charge of that vehicle. I'm the one that made the decision to turn right, even though he told me that I was good. I have to live with that decision. That was my decision that I made based off of his suggestion or referral, but that's a decision that I still decided to make. I can't speak on other people being complicit and turning their turning a blind eye to certain behavior. I don't agree with it, and that's not something that I would do. That's not something that people that have coached me, that have said, that have showed me and said that, you know, be tolerant and make sure you're doing right by people, not the uniform. You're doing right by people. So I guess it's so hard. You guys are asking some very good questions, and it's a lot of situations where it's like I haven't been in, and it's tough for me to speak on other people's decisions, motivations, and actions. I'm just one officer myself, and I know how I've been trained. I know how I've been brought up outside of police and my friends and family, and how I've been socializing to get to this point. And I know that what the right things that I would do, but I don't know every single of those things for other people. And it's just tough to speak on it, right? Just like it'd be tough for you to speak on everybody at your profession, right?
I wanted to just chime in really quickly. I also want to validate also something Jeremy said. There's a point in my HR career where, like, Jeremy's had a conversation with me before, like, I should be a cop when he was entering, and we've had that conversation. So that is something that he does advocate for. I also want to say this. In terms of hiring more Black people, I do think that would have an impact. When I had my disruptive experience with a police officer, I had a wooden engraved pick in my back pocket. A police officer, I thought it was a knife, asked me what was in my back pocket. I reached for the pick. He pulled out his weapon. I was like, it's a pick. Please God, it's a pick. Wow. And we had that conversation. I know if it was a brother like Jeremy, I would not have that same interaction. And that's just a fact. So that leads me into my next question. My next question is, how do the police recruit members from the communities that they serve? I've always said that I believe the best type of policing comes from leaders within that community that the police serve and operate in. So my question to you, maybe you might not know, but like, do you also have an HR background and a police officer? So how do you recruit members from that community to better serve the community who are knowledgeable about the impact of that community?
So there are specific information sessions where it's like, this is for women, this is for people of color, this is for everybody. There have been those where I've been asked to speak at one. I've even volunteered very early on in my career because I know that information session that I went to has such a big impact on me. But those are ways. Like I said, I do it myself. I am always telling people, think about doing the job. And that's my own friends, and that's people in the community. I was at one of the clubs getting video, and a bouncer came up to me as I was waiting for some video. And he's like, man, you know, I haven't seen any Black cops. You're the first one. And he's like, that's why I felt comfortable to come up to you. And I want to do what you're doing eventually, but like, I'm still young. Blah, blah, blah. And I just kind of gave him my quick spiel right there on what is important to get to this point where you can actually apply and hopefully be successful. And that took 5 minutes out of my day. And it's a conversation with a new person who, now if they see me in the community, they're going to be cool with me, you know, give me the nod, give me a wave, give me something. I think that's how most of the recruiting works. I know that I have already 3 or 4 friends that have gotten hired where I, not to say I helped them get hired, but I played a role in giving them some advice or conversations where they were hired. So unfortunately, none of them being Black, but still other people that I know that are good people that I believe would represent the uniform very well, but none of my Black friends have taken the leap with me yet. I have 2 that I'm really working on, but you know, we'll see how that goes.
Okay. Amani, I believe you said you had a question. Or Ian, you had a question as well. Whichever one, unmute the mic first.
You can go first, Ian.
Yeah, so there's a lot of talk right now about defunding the police and having sort of less financial resources going towards police service and directed towards, community projects, anti-racism training, etc. From a police perspective, or from a Black policeman's perspective, why is there so much funding for the police? And do you feel that this sort of financial funding is misdirected? More guns, more protective gear. I know in Toronto, they just ordered some like super tech stuff. And it's like, in what situation would you need that from?
I'm not in control of the books. I'm not a treasurer. So I don't know what money's being allocated everywhere, my honest answer. I do think it's important for us to have very good equipment, updated equipment, current equipment in what we do, even in terms of the computers that we use. They're just like not the greatest stuff. They're slow. They make our job difficult at times. I think it's important for an organization like police to have appropriate funding. I don't know what it would look like if they were to take away funding from us. I don't know what aspects of policing people are looking. I know people saying, you know, less guns and whatnot. One, I don't think that we have an exorbitant amount of guns. I do have a firearm when I am working. I wouldn't feel comfortable. Like, there are some situations dictated. Eddie, to your point, where you got the weapon pulled out on you, I'm pretty sure it was a firearm that was probably pulled out on you. In the Canadian use of force model, a knife is considered serious bodily harm or death. That's what a knife is considered. And using a firearm or lethal force, at least presenting it, is a justified reaction to somebody using a knife. If you were to get stabbed with a knife, you're going to bleed out and die, most likely.
Can I just chime in on that? Okay, so if during the riot, police officers are to use rubber bullets, why don't they use rubber bullets on scene?
I don't have that answer. I don't know who's using rubber bullets. I've never been privy to any training where rubber bullets were used. I don't think it's effective. It goes along the same conversations where people are like, why don't you just shoot that guy in the leg, or shoot him in the arm, or shoot the knife out of their hand?
Shoot the knife out of their hand.
I don't know if y'all think we're John Wick or...
No action movie.
Whoa.
This is real life. When I have my firearm out, even in training, I'm going, my heart is over 200 beats per minute. I have auditory exclusion. I have tunnel vision. These are all the different scenarios where they put us in during our training, where they're like, okay, you have to shake that auditory exclusion. They're yelling at you. You need to hear what's going on. If someone's reloading or someone's coming up behind you, it's your support or your ally. You need to know what's going on. But at the same time, like I said, it happens. I'm going through auditory exclusion. I'm going through tunnel vision. I'm fixated on this person in front of me, and my heart's beating out of my chest. So those people saying like those things, it's not realistic. It's just not realistic. I couldn't, if I were to shoot at somebody, I'm praying that I hit them. That's how shooting a gun is not easy with a moving target, with someone coming at you with a weapon, or someone going towards somebody else with a weapon.
It's more difficult to shoot. Like, it's difficult to shoot someone in the leg and not in the chest.
100%. Your chest is a large target. Someone's leg is something that's moving. Your chest is not moving.
But if you miss the leg, it's okay.
No, missing your shots is not okay. You're responsible for every shot that you fire. You're responsible for every round that leaves your gun. But I'm saying people's expectations of, hey, I want you to shoot them in the leg. You want me to shoot someone that's running away from me, that's 50 feet away from me. That's not a realistic expectation.
Why would you shoot someone that's running?
Pardon?
Oh, it's just an example, I guess. Yeah,
running towards you or running towards someone to hurt them. That's the point I'm making. Shooting someone that's running away from you, No, like I said, there's ways to escalate situations. Going back to Pompeo, whatever his name is in Toronto, he didn't need to go on that bus. He could have just waited it out, right? So shooting someone running away is not appropriate. But if someone's running away to attack someone that's ahead of them, that is what I'm talking about. Or if they're running laterally, that's not an easy shot. But we are trained at all these different distances, and shooting behind cover and shooting from your vehicle. We are trained at the at the college. I shot over 2,000 rounds, and I'm not going to say I'm a John Wick or anything like that. I pray if I had to use it, I would use it effectively, and I would use it so nobody had anything sustained. Like, no, I'd hope to never kill a person. I'd hope that they could recover from that bullet injury, but I'm not going to say that I'm going to hit this guy right in the shoulder and then it's going to pop the knife out of their hand. And it's not realistic. There are, but I will say our TAC team, those guys that are like our SWAT team, they shoot guns all the time. They're always doing shooting things. So when there's a school shooter situation, those are the guys that are going. If there's somebody that's an active shooting, those are the guys. There's people that I work with that are ex-military. If we're doing the canine track, and he's my partner, and it's supposed to be me and him going, if there's a TAC guy and him, I'm sitting myself at this corner and I'm being a watch for someone coming through because I know they'll be more effective if they have to discharge their firearm.
My turn, I guess. So mine is more of an open-ended question to like everyone. What do you think is going to come out of the protests in Canada? Like, as a general opinion, and not about the police, but the government, because I've been saying that the government just apologizes and never really puts any real meaningful change every time there's a protest, because there's just an apology and band-aids and they don't really fix anything. Like, Trudeau just acknowledged that there's racism in Canada. I'm just like, you guys are just smelling the stench of blood that's built the foundations of this.
Come on. Tell the truth. Like, you speak on it.
Suddenly saw this huge elephant in the room, but that's not really anything if it's still there. I was at a conference in Toronto in March, and at that conference there was an Indigenous speaker. Her name I forget her name, but she was talking about white supremacy. And so when someone asked, like, what the first step is, she's like, we've been on the first step. We've lived on the first step. We've been here for hundreds of years. What is the next step? So, like, what's everyone's thoughts on what will happen after the protests, like radio silence or maybe actual meaningful change at a federal level?
Nothing. Nothing will happen. They don't care about us. Oh. They don't care about us. We're forgotten. We are trendy. Support is super trendy. And it's very easy to be an ally right now because everybody's an ally. But are you going to be an ally in a month when nothing's happening, when it's quiet and nothing's going on? To you, but to us, this is our experience. I don't think nothing's going to happen. That's my personal opinion. I think I'm a bit jaded because, like you said, we've lived through it. We've seen the mouth talk. We've seen people apologize, and we've seen them rally for us and say, you know, change is going to be made. But I think people just like to show like they're supportive. And while it's popular, but
now, so I mean, we're talking about sort of allies and our white friends on Facebook. Is the police force taking attention, and are they doing anything? Are they going to do anything? Do you think that's the same?
Can I turn the question back to you? And say, what do you want to be done?
Well, me personally, I want all Babylon to burn to a crisp.
Come on!
I want Babylon to burn to a crisp. That includes the police force. But, you know, that's just me. And I do not... I write poems. So, you know, we take it day at a time.
But do you think that society could function without police?
Absolutely.
I think so. I think that the system that we live in, the police have been set up to, in theory, provide a service. But I do think that there needs to be a major overhaul of the police industrial complex, the military industrial complex, the prison industrial complex. And there's countries whereby changes have happened. You know, what does it look like for police to not walk around with guns? What does it look like to have more anti-racism training within the force, to, you know, have more community engagement? You know, what does that look like? If defunding for certain aspects happens, you know, what does that look like? But you know, I'm not, I think hearts need to change. I think you're right about, you know, the fact that having more diversity within the force, I think can help. But I also think that absolute power corrupts absolutely. And, you know, I wouldn't trust me with a gun walking around.
Well, why wouldn't you trust you? You know, you're a good person. You know, you're a decent person.
It, like, corruptible.
Yeah.
Corruption can happen either way. You can start off as a good person and end up corrupted. What is there to stop that? We're relying on human nature here. Let's say, for example, a cashier has no choice whether or not they can provide good customer service. That's their job. I've never seen a cashier throw money in someone's face.
You haven't been to Walmart.
maybe throw it at like their, you know, on the whatever table. But I've never seen them like go over the counter and start beating them up all because Karen said ABC. I've never seen that.
I've seen people act up. I haven't seen an assault in front of me, but like I've seen it. I'm sure if I were to go on YouTube and type in cashier beating someone up, there'd be tons of people.
Probably trending.
But you know what? To be in all honesty, I don't think anything, like I really truly believe that our freedoms and justice being served overall, it's really for us, it is gonna, especially that we're in Canada, I do believe that it's going to have to start with Indigenous people, because like there's no way that we're living in a quote-unquote developed world and they don't even have drinking water. They're on water advisories. How can we sit by and just let that happen? You know, and yes, we're protesting, but it's like, what is really next? Yeah, like, why aren't we pushing for these things to go? And I think a large part of that is that many of us are not educated on laws, our rights. And because of that, we're not motivated to actually make a difference because some of these issues don't actually touch us.
Yep. And I think the Black community has their own issues. Sorry to cut you off, Imani. Black community has their own issues, so that we're focused on dealing with our own issues. So it's tough to have to, at the same time, deal with your own problems, reach out and try to deal with somebody else's problems. We're bearing our own cross right now.
Right.
That's where it takes the majority to then step in and not just be helpful now, but be helpful always and continue to be helpful. And at a lot of the time, it's Black people and Black women specifically that are leading the charge to help out other people before helping themselves.
Factual.
Yeah. So I
we are here riding for y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Always. But yeah, the Indigenous community definitely has to be addressed. It's also tough that in terms of policing capacity, they police themselves. They have their own Indigenous police, so they don't have the other larger police forces at their disposal, and also they're stuck on their reserves, exiled away from the rest of the populations and forgotten.
Imani, you had a question, yeah?
Yeah, I actually had a comment. So, like, even, like, with Indigenous people, like, there were protests for, like, the pipelines and everything. Mm-hmm. And then after social media was done with it, no one ever heard about it again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's, like, it's a trend that we have in our society where, oh, my gosh, Sudan. Then, after, okay. And, like, the Uyghurs, what happened to them? We forgot after COVID. There are all these protests, yet there's no real change happening. And it's just so aggravating because we get all these apologies.
Mm-hmm.
Just shove your apologies and actually do something to actually fix this at an actual
level. I will add to that is that part of it is how many of the movements are non-hierarchical. So a lot of them don't really have like this one leader who's making all of these demands, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of us, just like you said, is that, you know, what do we want? What change do we want to see? So if as a collective, we know what we want to see, then we're not going to stop until we see it. Mm-hmm. So that needs to be kind of the mindset that we all have as a hive, as a beehive, if you want to call it. And to be honest with you, a lot of governments are relying on the fact that it's going to be yesterday's news and that we'll be distracted and that we'll be tired. Mm-hmm. So we have to find a way to overcome that tactic. That's how I see it.
Mm-hmm. One, I want to read, Jewel had a message for Jeremy right before she left. She wanted to encourage, she said, keep being a light in a dark place and hopefully that your light ignites others, which I think is very beautiful. I also want to thank you, Jeremy. The thing is, like, I had this idea. I just DM'd Jeremy right away. He said yes. I didn't brief him about nothing. I didn't let him know how long it was going to be. He was just really willing to come out.
I was yes, man. I thought this was going to be like a half hour. I got to go back.
And he's just willing to come out. And that shows what a good dude you are. Thank you, man.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. I really appreciate it.
Nah, thank you guys for including me. Thank you guys for asking me all these tough questions. Yeah, you guys made me really think and be very mindful of what I wanted to say, because I am not a speaker box for the police service. I am a Black man, and I'm feeling the same anger that you guys feel. So thank you for challenging me. Thank you for including me. Thank you for supporting me. And just thank you for having this conversation.
Thanks so much. Hopefully we can bring you back. I think it was a really great conversation.
I would love to talk about anything and anything with you guys.
Okay. Gizzy, you hopped on too late. Gizzy.
They should arrest him.
Arrest him right now.
No one lost him. Not for me.
But make sure you read him his rights, eh?
Always.
Please do.
Yeah, next time I want to talk about, you know, what things minorities can do to when they encounter the police and sort of best practices.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, I'd love to have a conversation with you guys.
Who taught you to breathe? Then took away your speech. Made you feel so loved, then shook your hand with gloves. You watched her pass away.
won't you say his name?
Say his name.